Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. With your hosts, Bo Spearham and Karina Hogan.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners on whose land we are broadcasting from. I also like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival. And a big shout out to everybody around the continent that is taking our program via the National Indigenous Radio Service NIRS or tuning in via our app, 98.9 FM for the best country, which you can download for free on your device from the App Store. Or if you're tuning in via our website, 98.9fm.com.au. Those platforms beaming us into your communities. And as always, it is great to have your company. Good morning, Karina Sis. How's things going?
Good morning, Bo. It's good. It's Monday.
It is Monday, and there's been quite a few changes, as expected, I guess.
Did you get a chance to see the Prime Minister and the Chief Medical Officer make the address last night to the nation?
No, I didn't. It's usually around the same time we do the routine with the kids.
Yeah, I know. So that's good. I didn't have my kids at the weekend, but I did switch it on and I had a look over sort of everything that was happening. There was a lot that came out of it. So you don't need to worry if you didn't watch it, because we can give you some more information about that over the program. For example, they've decreased the number of people allowed at social gatherings from 10 to 2. And it's enforceable in most states and territories, and it carries fines with it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm hoping that mob, you know, who are listening are aware of that and can take that on board. I mean, I don't want people getting in trouble.
I think they said it was still the same as for funerals for 10, and then also for weddings it is 5. But then, if you're going out in public, it's down to 2.
Yes, correct. Yes. However, big clause, especially for black fellas, if you are in the same household, that is an exception. So, for example, I have, my cousin and my niece and 2 nieces downstairs, and then I have me and my 2 kids upstairs, and then I have 2 other nieces as well. So that's, how many is that? I forgot how many people live in my house, Bo. But anyway, so everyone that lives within our house, we can all go out together, right? So that's not a problem. But if you are out in public, if you're out exercising, it used to be 10 for boot camp, it's now 2.
Yes.
So it's just driving home that social distancing stuff yet again.
Definitely. Because the more that we do this, it increases, the population in getting it.
Yeah, they've advised that if you want to leave the house, you can do so if you need to go to the shops, if you're going to
essentials.
Medical treatment. For that exercise stuff I was talking about, he particularly spoke about, people wanting to go out for a walk, with one other person for safety reasons.
There's also been some big things in regards to medical help and support as well. So we do have Dr. Brett on the line to chat with us very soon.
But
heard on the radio this morning, there's been some massive changes to that.
Yeah, there have been heaps of changes to the support that they're going to give different medical ways of getting medical help,
Yeah.
So like telehealth.
Was it like appointments?
What does that look like? What does it mean? Mm. So Brett's going to talk about
that's
that.
That's it. And then also some restrictions on age.
Yes.
On the elderly and also in regards to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people elders within our community.
So what was announced was that if you are over 60, if you're living with a chronic disease, or if you're Indigenous and over 50, that they've advised not to leave the house.
I'm sure there is lots of community health workers and lots of elders, lots of people who we see as elders and as uncles and aunties that are around that 50-year age mark that do things in the community that is essential to us as well. So it'll be good to have a yarn with them as well, just to see how that affects them, their work, and their livelihood as well.
I tell you what, I know that it's affecting my own mother. She's lives with chronic diseases herself, and and has been in hospital recently, and so she hasn't been able to see see nieces and nephews, and her grandchildren. So that's been difficult for mum. So shout out to my beautiful mother. But for now, what we're going to do is we're going to kick off every program for everyone that's just tuned in. We're going to kick off every program of Let's Talk this week, particularly talking to Dr. Brett Shannon, and he's the chair of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Community Health Service, and he's also an occupational physician registrar.
And also, really quickly before he comes in, it's really, really good to have Dr. Brett on the program. One, because the updates that we need to give to community, and also the changes, you know, how this is affecting, you know, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in particular. It's always good to have that perspective and have that knowledge, you know, from a doctor who's working to provide adequate support, you know, to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community here in particular, I guess, southeast Brisbane.
And not any doctor either, Bo. He's a black fella, you know, that makes it really important as well.
Always.
So without further ado, I'll introduce Dr. Brett Shannon, who's the chair for the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Community Health Service, and also he is an occupational physician registrar with the College of Physicians. Hello, Dr. Brett. How are you?
Hey, Karina. Hey, Bo. Thank you for having me this morning.
Thanks for coming,
brother.
I just want to acknowledge traditional owners and pay my respects as well.
Yeah, thanks, Brett. And before we go on any further, do you want to tell us who your mob is and where you're from?
Yeah, so my mob is the Noongar descendants from the Quandamooka people from Moreton and Stradbroke Island. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I'm from.
I guess just on, you know, where your mob are from as well, how's things happening, you know, in and around those areas? You know, are people, is the community, you know, on some of these islands sort of self-quarantining and putting these things in place?
I think we have had concerns about Stradbroke Island and people coming and going, and there was sort of a public case on Stradbroke Island recently, and I think across the state we've had concerns about when, if this gets into communities, the impact it will have.
Mm.
Just because, like you guys just said, high-risk people are Indigenous people over the age of 50, which is a lot of our mob.
Mm. And those living with chronic diseases, mm-hmm. which accounts for a lot of our mob as well.
Yeah.
Is there a medical centre on the island?
Yeah, there is. So Yulaberry Bar is open Monday to Friday and on Stradbroke Island.
And I understand if you do feel like you are experiencing symptoms, the best thing to do is to call the service first and then let them know that you're experiencing symptoms before you go in. Is that correct?
Yeah, most definitely. So if you're experiencing any upper respiratory symptoms, coughing, fever, sort of runny nose, sore throat, things like that, call the service. They'll direct you on the most appropriate way to seek medical attention, whether you should come in or whether you should go to another service and get tested, things like that.
And so this week, Brett, we're focusing on education. We're going to be having a yarn later on to Nola, who runs an online education program, Indigenous online education program. And we're talking to her about how we can best teach our kids from home. But in the meantime, today schools will be considered what they say is student free, which means if you're an essential worker, you can still send your kids to work and to school. So I guess what I want to focus on with you today is social distancing. And I'm just wondering, you know, if some of these kids are being sent to school, is it healthy to be sending them to school?
I think there's been quite a debate over the last 2 weeks for everyone about whether we should send kids to school or not. And there's pros and cons to a lot of situations with this coronavirus. But I think the first thing, what's unequivocal, is that the best thing parents can do to ensure that their children remain safe is making sure they wash their hands mm-hmm. for 20 seconds with soap and water and observe good hygiene, and teaching that and just drilling that into them. That is the main thing that we're going to use to attack this virus with children. I think if we look at what's happened internationally as well, there's no evidence that certain countries that did close schools had better outcomes than those that didn't close schools.
Okay.
For instance, Hong Kong closed schools and is not been more successful significantly in containing the virus than Singapore, which didn't close schools.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. Do kids carry germs a lot more than adults? I've heard that being said.
Most definitely certain age groups of kids carry more germs, but specifically to the coronavirus or COVID-19, at this stage, school-age children particularly, it seems like they're the cohort least affected by this virus. The reason for that is not yet known. And the other thing that experts don't know yet is whether children who appear to be healthy are in fact carrying and spreading the virus.
Carriers, they're called, right?
Well, I guess, you know, does your personal and your professional point of view change on this as well? With this approach, with schools, with kids going to school, how does your personal and professional point of view differ? Obviously, you know, with your medical, career and all that as well.
It's a good question, Bo. Yeah, because you've probably seen on the news as well. There's dispute between doctors, some doctors for and some doctors against. And I think that we have to balance the disruption of closing schools, including taking parents out of various jobs that look after small children at home. I think we have to think about closing schools across the board, how this impacts the health workforce to provide medical care. I know lots of doctors and nurses who won't be able to continue to work, particularly even ones that I work with, if we do close daycare and the like.
Because I know for me, Brett, I'm a single mother, so I have my kids 1 week on and 1 week off. And so on the weeks that I have my children, I'm in at the studio doing this, which is providing a service to blackfellas, hopefully, to give them information. So I'm considered an essential service. I would usually have no choice but to send them to school, but thankfully my cousin's living with me, so she's going to be taking care of the kids. So you're saying if you've got someone at home that can take care of the kids that's within your household, then do it. But if not,
I guess you have no choice.
Yeah, it's about balancing that out, right?
Yeah. And like I said, the evidence for or against is not really there in terms of closing all schools and keeping kids out of school. There's actually evidence from the CDC in the States that can do more harm than good in some ways, because kids tend to congregate outside of school then and have not adhered to social distancing in certain areas during this pandemic.
I have a question. So my niece wants to, she's 13 and she lives at my place, and she wants to bring a friend over on Wednesday night. What would you say to her? Because immediately when she brought it to my attention, I was like, oh, I think I'm going to be the bad auntie.
I think, like you just mentioned, things have changed since last night. I think it was the Prime Minister's announcement about restricting indoor and outdoor gatherings from 10 people to 2. I think you're still adhering to those restrictions. I think I always ask people and tell people to ask just if you've had a cough or a cold recently, and just make sure they've been well for the last 24 to 48 hours before they come over. And then just adhere to the social distancing rules that have been put in place.
So do you think I should tell her to postpone the sleepover?
No, I don't think you have to. I just think you have to check to make sure she's been well and then just adhere to the social distancing protocols.
Okay. Maybe get her to check in, maybe check in with her parents.
Yeah, she doesn't live with her parents. So.
Okay. No, her friend.
Yeah, my niece's friend. She lives with a friend. So, because I said the same thing. I was like, what's her parents saying? So I'm just wondering then, if we are sending our kids to school and people are kind of like iffy about the possibility, are there things that we can do to prevent that? I know you said personal hygiene stuff, like washing your hands, coughing into your elbow. My daughter was coughing into her elbow today, which is great. But what about things like wearing masks? I bought a mask for the kids just because, you know, I just wanted to buy a mask for the kids and teach them about certain things, and maybe they may need it one day. Should I send them to school with it?
That's a really good question, Karina, and a question I've had a lot this week. Use of a mask by a healthy child or adult in a public place, sort of when interacting with people, particularly less than 15 minutes when they're interacting, is quite unwarranted at this stage.
Okay.
And research has actually shown that there may be negative factors to this as well, to wearing a mask. So they've done studies that show people that wear face masks actually touch their face a lot more often than not having a mask. If that mask is being put on and off and on and off, you're potentially putting yourself at risk.
Okay.
Putting it around without even realising it.
I didn't even think of that.
But when you should wear a mask, or where it does help, is one, obviously people that have coronavirus. Secondly, if you're a healthcare worker or a dentist, And obviously there's mandatory requirements in Australia now about quarantine. You're required to wear a face mask if you need to leave your home for any reason or if you're visiting a medical facility. But just for the general public, and particularly kids, I would say not to.
Definitely.
Okay, well, switching our attention now to telehealth, because $1 billion was committed last night by the Prime Minister in his address to the nation. So $1 billion. So he has said that the WhatsApp service that you can go on to is oz.gov.au/WhatsApp. And on there you can... You can follow the prompts and it'll give you the information around how it is that you can participate in telehealth. The other thing that he mentioned was the coronavirus app, which is up and available on your Apple or Android. So I'm just wondering, from your perspective, Brett, how effective is telehealth?
I think telehealth is a requirement in the current climate. I think there's pros and cons to telehealth. Like you said, things changed yesterday. As of today, everyone can access telehealth. So previously, there was restrictions around who could access it, but now everyone can. You can get your health checked via telehealth with our Aboriginal Community Control Services, your care plans. Anyone can have a teleconsult. We're working on video at the moment, but it's just phone calls at this stage. I think the pros are it's opportunity for everyone to get in quicker, to organise appointments. It's easier access for those that can't get to a clinic. And the other pro is that you can always escalate it. So you can start with a telehealth, and if they need to come in for a face-to-face, then that can be arranged after the telehealth consult.
Mm-hmm. How does the Brisbane community get in contact with their AMS to organise that?
Yeah, definitely both. So anyone in Brisbane can call the number 3240-8900 and then select the appropriate clinic out of all of our Aboriginal medical services, and they'll direct you and book a telehealth consult for you at a time that's convenient for you.
Oh, so they'll actually do it for you?
Yep, so they'll arrange, the administration team will arrange the appointment for you and you'll receive the phone call at the designated time.
Okay, and you can do it on your own as well? You can log on to the oz.gov.au/WhatsApp and do it yourself?
For booking appointments with the AMSs?
No, so for booking telehealth.
Yeah. But specifically for our services, you have to call that phone number.
Yeah, sure.
But definitely, yeah. Check out the app, have a look at it.
Yeah. So what else is the Community Health Service doing at AICS Brisbane to prepare for this telehealth?
I think there's been a lot of changing of roles and responsibilities, Karina.
Yeah.
We're a big organisation. There's been a lot of movement of staff. I think our first priority is the safety of our staff and the well-being of our staff. So trying to protect our frontline workers that are going out into community, particularly both our health team and our human resources sort of team, our youth workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we've had a changing a lot of roles. Communicating with government constantly about our action plan for the next stage, if we get there, and trying to set up. So a lot of changes this week about the telehealth. I think about last week and the week before, we had a significant increase in our telehealth, particularly with our elderly, sort of over 50 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander mob. But now telehealth is going to ramp up significantly.
Definitely.
And just trying to get the resources right so we've got enough doctors and enough nurses to sort of have enough of a workforce going forward as demand increases.
Awesome. Just before we wrap up with you as well, Dr. Brett, coming out last night, there was, restrictions on sort of, elderly people and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people over the age of 50. Now, does AICS, and I'm sure they might have, uncles and aunties that are over 50 and over that are working, and like, how would they be affected? What will their work capacity be, I guess?
Yeah, that's a good question. But we've already got some staff working from home who have been deemed high risk. And this will continue to change. It's going to be a fluid situation for weeks to months. And as the risk increases, so will the requirements for certain people to work from home or stay home, like we saw last night with over 50s. So good question. We've already sort of started implementing this and people are working from home to sort of reduce the risk for those that are at increased risk of severe disease.
It's been a really good chat today, Brett, but just to wrap it up each day when we have a yarn with you, we want you to set the record straight on something different each day, okay? So I was scrolling through Facebook the other day and saw some rather, I think, racist and pretty disgusting and despicable remarks that were put on Facebook regarding what the actual word COVID-19 means, because some people don't quite understand the difference between coronavirus and COVID-19. What are the differences? So I want to know from you, what does COVID-19 actually mean?
Yeah, it's a good question, Karina. I haven't seen those posts myself, but COVID-19 is name given to this virus by WHO, or the World Health Organization. So they called it COVID-19 back in February when this pandemic sort of started spreading internationally. COVID-19 is an acronym that stands for Coronavirus Disease of 2019. So that's all it is an acronym for
coronavirus. So CO, Corona. VI, virus, and then D for December and 19.
Disease.
I was a bit hard of hearing there, brother. Okay, cool. So there you go. It's not what those racist things were saying online. It actually means coronavirus disease 2019. And the word corona, what about that word? Where did that come from? Someone's name or?
So coronaviruses are a set of zoonotic diseases. SARS and MERS are previously significant ones we've had in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. Coronavirus, it's actually Latin, so it gets its name from Latin words. The word corona means crown, mm-hmm. and the word virus is also a Latin word meaning venom. So coronavirus is those two Latin words.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists back in the 60s came up with the term coronavirus. When they looked at the virus under a microscope, they thought it resembled a solar eclipse. So they called it a corona, as in a solar corona.
Oh, there you go.
That's good. That's good to know. I thought it was like maybe got named after like a doctor having a charge. You know, I didn't have an idea what to call it now.
There's plenty of those. But
yeah, well, Brett, it's been really good to speak with you today. And we're going to speak with you every day this week from Monday to Thursday. And we'll get a new update tomorrow. So thanks very much for that.
Definitely big thanks to that, brother, and definitely big shout out to yourself and, you know, all the other health professionals, you know, working on the front line, you know, to prevent this from, you know, outbreaking in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities.
My pleasure, guys.
Oh, there you go. That was Dr. Brett Shannon, and he is an occupational physician registrar with the College of Physicians, and he's also the chair at the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Community Health Service here in Brisbane. That was an interesting chat, wasn't it?
It was, definitely. So, really, really keen, you know, to have a chat with Dr. Brett tomorrow and just sort of see how things, you know, if things are changing and ramping up as well. But we're going to head to a quick song and I'm going to come back after that with our next guest. I'm going to go to Our Native Tongue by Mojo Juju. You're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM.
easy enough for you to say. It ain't no thing. But I'm the one, you ain't the one. Been living in the skin. If you wanna call me something, call it to my face. But I will not apologize for taking up this space. Every time you cut me down, I'm gonna come back fierce. The time is through for being nice. Let's call it what it is.
I'm on air.
I don't speak my father's native tongue. I was born under the southern sun. I don't know where I belong. I don't know where I belong.
Sorry about that. Didn't put the return back in. But if you're just tuning in to Let's Talk, that was Mojo Juju with her song Native Tongue, which is an amazing song. Came out a couple of years ago and just sort of blew up and, you know, took a life of its own. Last year, towards the end of the year, me and Lizzie actually got to interview Sister Girl a couple of times, catch up with her a few times, sorry, and interview her once here at the station. It was a privilege. It was really, really deadly to have a chat with her as well. Karina.
I never got to see her live, though.
Yeah.
I saw that she was there at Clancestry last year, and I was supposed to go down, but I just got word from all the girls that apparently she was just amazing.
Yeah. Really, really good. Like, we end up going in on the Saturday or the Sunday, like a couple of days after.
Mm-hmm.
And then when me and Lizzie chatted to her, she was doing a tour, and then the next time we saw her was at Deadly Hearts. I think it's this program that I think
Deadly
might do. And she was performing, and like we were just backstage. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds pretty bloody amazing. At the moment, though, we're talking coronavirus, and if you've just tuned in to 98.9 FM, we started the program with Dr. Brett Shannon, who is the chair of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Community Health Service, and he gave us a little insight into some of the stuff around telehealth, what you can access as far as getting more information around the coronavirus. Also, there is a coronavirus app that is available on your Apple and Android.
Yeah, I downloaded it this morning when you mentioned it as well.
You did. And so getting onto that and getting yourself up to speed on what's going on there. And if you have any issues with that, give your local Aboriginal Medical Service a call and see if they can help you or direct you in the right to where you need to go in order to get that stuff up and running.
And definitely. And also Dr. Brett mentioned as well with that in terms of the telehealth, it's called?
Yeah.
You just call your local, call the medical service hotline, the AMS hotline, and let them know which sort of district you're in, and they'll navigate you to your local or your nearest AMS, and then the workers there, they'll book a time with you, take your number down, and they'll
And if you're here in Southeast Queensland, you can contact that number on 3240 8900. Otherwise, wherever else you are throughout the nation, have a look for your local Aboriginal medical service. There's also that coronavirus hotline that we've been speaking about, which is 1-800-020-080, because if you don't need to leave the house, then please don't. Like as Dr. Brett mentioned prior to the program, if you're living with a chronic disease, which a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are, unfortunately, you're more susceptible to catching the disease and also
definitely
not surviving it. So we want to look after our old people, especially. I know how important they are in our community, like people like you, Bo, because as you mentioned just before, when the song was on, that you're my elder and you can tell me what to do.
Yes.
Yes.
So our first, I'd like a cup of tea.
No.
But also, just on that there really quickly, like with elders and, you know, mob that do have sort of existing health conditions, let's be a bit more mindful in terms of when we shop as well. You know, so these mob don't have to leave to go to shop and do more and more shopping as sort of, you know, the weeks go on and things become a bit more restricted. You know, let's be mindful in terms of how we shop. And
absolutely. And last week we spoke about business particularly, and there are some Aboriginal businesses out there, food businesses that are struggling at the moment. So why not get onto their sites and have a look at grabbing some of their stuff. You know, I know sometimes it may be a little bit more expensive, sometimes not. I went and had a little bit of a look over the weekend. But one thing I did notice, because I haven't been able to go shopping very often because we do the breakfast program, by the time I get there, everything's kind of gone. Mm-hmm. Well, what I did notice on Sunday, because I did my one shop on Sunday, was how expensive things were in the shops. Have you been to the shops?
No, I don't go.
So I don't know if it's just me, it could just be me, but they seem to be more expensive. So I reckon get online and do a bit of research and see if you can find stuff that you can get delivered to your place that may even be cheaper than going to these big massive
chains.
We
order veggies.
Yeah, you order veggies.
Yeah, good fresh fruit and veggies dropped off once a week.
Mm. Oh.
And then Jade, she does like the shop run for other things that we need as well. But like last week's shop, I think will hold us up for maybe like a week and a bit.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. But then when you're at home all the time, you just want to eat all the time.
Mm.
Neck minute.
That's it, yeah.
Auntie. So this week we're focusing on education. Last week was business, and this week we want to focus on delving into education. For me, one thing that I thought, Bo, is I always look for opportunities in whatever, and I just thought with the COVID virus and with kids being at home for such long periods of time, is this a time that we could possibly maybe teach them a little bit more about First Nations education? First Nations education?
Education, history, culture. There's lots to be learned within this time as well. And I think, like, you know, as mob, we do that regardless anyways, but, you know, more emphasis on that there as well. When we do go back, you know, when these kids do go back to school, it would be amazing to see, you know, First Nations education.
Being embedded at the schools particularly. And so we've got Nola Turner-Jensen with us, and she runs an Indigenous education business called Cracker Jacks Education. So I'll let her introduce herself. Hello, Nola, are you there?
Hello. How are you?
Oh, we're fantastic. How are you, Nola?
Good, mate. Good. Isolated.
Isolated, yeah, doing the right thing. You've kept everything, your social distancing for the 1.5 metres. You're staying indoors unless you need to go shopping for medical treatment or to exercise, but only with two people.
Yeah, I'm really, except I'm distancing from my teenage son at the moment, so we're probably spending a bit too much time together, but that is all going well.
I got that bored at the weekend. That it was my ex's weekend with the kids, that I rang him up on two occasions and had the kids come back and stay at my place for an extra 3 or 4 hours and had a sleepover one on Friday night.
It's pretty restricting on what you can do. It is pretty boring when you have to stay indoors.
Oh, definitely. We're practicing it at work, for the second week where shows with two hosts or two presenters we have to record in separate studios.
So Bo's a good 5 metres away from me, which apparently he reckons he likes because he can mute me from the other studio. You can't escape me. But, Nola, I'd love to talk to you about Cracker Jack Education and what it is that you do. Can you tell me a bit about it?
Yeah, we started Cracker Jack Education several years ago because one, I could see that education was going digital, and two, I was really disturbed. I was working as an Indigenous early childhood consultant at that time, going around the early childhood centres and primary schools and just couldn't see there, you know, much evidence of Aboriginal curriculum being used in the classroom as an everyday practice, not just at NAIDOC, you know. And so I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if we developed a website where we were sort of in the forefront of that digital transformation, and it was Aboriginal culture. So that's why we started it.
Brilliant.
What's some of, sorry.
No, well, you go.
I think we both might have asked, we're going to ask the same question. What is some of the stuff on the website?
Yes, it was.
We have, I've been published about 5 times Aboriginal children's books with Magabala. Magabala is an Aboriginal publishing company in Broome. So one of the things that they agreed to was for us to use their beautiful books and film Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people reading them. And so we've got people like Aunty Ruth Hegarty, who actually grew up on a mission at Cherbourg, but she reads the book Dolan Girl. And it's so powerful because it's really her life in this book. And she reads it amazingly. And it really made everybody in the room so emotional. People like Charlie Dyer Lynn Chapman, who's an Aboriginal education worker. So lots of familiar faces around Brisbane and Queensland that are reading these stories. Animation. We have licenses with the ABC for these brilliant Aboriginal designed animations of dreaming stories and other stories. Interactive games, like one of them is called the Symbols Game, where you match the Aboriginal symbol with what it is. Or musical pairs, where you try and do like a memory game, but when you click on it, it's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander music, musical instruments. Mm. And when you get it right, you hear that music. Okay. Just stuff like that. It's really cool.
So a lot of the stuff that are on these websites, and if we're encouraging, students and parents to use your, to check your stuff out more, is a lot of your stuff, I guess, credited, as sort of, to go?
It's all matched to the national curriculum, and we were involved in, as a publisher with the national curriculum when it first started, and we're also accredited with NESA in New South Wales and the Teacher Quality Institute. We do have online PD for the educators to learn to get their professional learning hours. Mm. So, yeah, we try and be... We're also a preferred supplier to TAFE for digital teacher resources.
Mm-hmm. Nola, for me, my kids have no choice. You know, being Indigenous is at the core of everything that they do and everything that they know. It's very second nature to them. But I still do try and incorporate things within the household, at the front, our front door, because we live on Yugambeh land, we have Welcome Jingiwali and, little things like that. So are there creative ways that we can embed Indigenous knowledge and culture and education throughout the household to get kids, to make them a little bit more aware of where they're from, or even for non-Indigenous kids?
Yeah, well, that's right. It's for all kids to learn about the country, isn't it? There's lots you can do. There's so many different activities, and you can grow a bush ducker garden, and you can create stories. You can learn language. You can have your simple language name and with an English translation and stick them all through the house, so when you're walking around, you're learning them as you go. You can do Aboriginal games, you can also look at the features that are around you and come up with your own type of stories about how you think they evolved and how you think they were created. And you can share those knowledge stories, from online or from the buying beautiful Aboriginal books, and just relate them to your area. So it doesn't matter. Aboriginal stories run through the entire continent. And so that philosophy is in every story. So you can read a story about the Northern Territory, for example, my home in Kakadu. But then you could be sitting in the middle of Sydney and you can relate that to your local area. So it's just about thinking outside the box, but taking the information and philosophy of Aboriginal stories and localising them.
Yeah. Tell us, Nola, what your background is. So have you worked in the education institution, or where is it that you've worked?
Yeah, well, I was a youth worker first and then evolved into a social worker and then evolved into working in early childhood for several years with a few of the government agencies and then sort of started working in some of the schools with some of the schools from that and just found they seemed to be so desperately, desperate for our resources. Mm. You know, they were saying the reason they didn't use them is because there's so few out there and all this. And so we thought, well, you know, let's go. So it all sort of evolved over time. And when we first designed the website, and there was a group of us, and one of the key people was Janelle Latcham. She was a lady that worked with me for many years. We had to make a choice. We had to make a choice whether we were going to be an Aboriginal site for kids to get on and learn back their culture, or we were going to be an Aboriginal site for teachers, non-Indigenous teachers, all teachers, to embed our curriculum in our culture in the curriculum. And we went that one way with it being teacher-led because we thought we would get more reach. We thought it would get out there more. But
Have there been challenges?
Certainly has been challenges. Often the Aboriginal being a cross-curriculum priority, it's not a subject. Mm-hmm. Until it's a subject, really, we're not going to get in the classrooms because they allocate percentages of the day to have this subject, English, math, science, geography. And the cross-curricular priorities get a few percentage, if they're lucky, in that day, in those lessons, in that day.
Yep.
So while ever we're lumped as the cross-curriculum priority, which is we're lumped with Asian studies, we're lumped with sustainability. While ever we're lumped there, we're really not going to have any weight on why they should include our culture in the classroom because they don't have to.
Well, I guess this year in itself has been a massive year. Australia needs to learn our First Nations history. You know, the beginning of the year, we saw most parts of, the East Coast on fire. You know, mismanagement of land was one thing. But then also the last couple of weeks, has drastically changed. Announced as today or over the next few days, schools are sort of, they've been more restrictions on students sort of going to school and stuff. Has your service, become, I guess, more wanted now? Are people starting to hear or use your service more?
Look, I think the problem is you've got to be nominated, promoted by each state education department. And when you're an Aboriginal business, they don't tend to do that. Actually it's part of their policy that I've been trying to change for several years, the policy of the government departments or the education departments in each state is not to promote self-funding business. Doesn't matter if you're one of the only ones. Doesn't matter how needed it is. It actually is their policy. So for Aboriginal business, education businesses to actually even be promoted by the state things. It's not their policy. I've been battling that for several years and I've actually got Queensland to change on that. They do have added us and Western Australia as well. It's a real difficulty trying to get promoted, but there has been an increase in it. Thing we dropped because we wanted to, support Aboriginal families. And the educators, we dropped our subscription from $99 a year to $20 a year.
Yeah.
And that has encouraged more people. So,
And they can jump on Crackerjack, your Crackerjack website, by going to crackerjackeducation.com.au. But Nola, we're going to wrap up soon. One thing that I did read, which was quite alarming to me, is that only 1.5 pages of a 1,500-page national curriculum is dedicated to Indigenous education. I found that a little bit disconcerting, to be honest. And I guess, as I mentioned before, I feel as though maybe at this time when you've got the opportunity to educate your mob at home, other than grabbing those awesome tools that you mentioned on your website, crackerjackeducation.com.au, this is an opportunity maybe for us to stop as a nation and look, while we've got time on our hands, if you are at home, to look at the education that we're teaching mob, well, not just mob, anyone, and about maybe increasing that 1.5 pages to maybe adding a zero to it, maybe 150 pages. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, the only way that's going to happen is if we're a subject. And at this stage, the federal government has no plans to make Aboriginal knowledge and history a subject in the national curriculum. And so that's really the battle. The battle is to make our knowledge and history a subject. And so if we can do that, then you'll have your 150 pages, you'll have a great deal more of our curriculum in the classroom.
And obviously now when there's a crisis, there's probably little chance of us being able to advocate that for that at this very moment. However, maybe because we've got time on our hands, if we're all loaded up with the information that we need to understand what the curriculum's all about and how important it is to kids. And then also, just, you know, for me, as I mentioned, my household, you can't get away from being Indigenous. I grew up just knowing that as second nature. However, there are things that you can do to further embed that knowledge. And, you know, I also enjoy learning about it as well.
Definitely. And if there's one thing that we all have at the moment, it's data and internet as well. So there's no need for people not to go to this website and websites like this to check information out as well.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, Nola.
All right, darling, that's my pleasure.
And that was Nola Turner-Jensen, and she runs the Indigenous education business, Crackerjack Education. She's got quite a history as well, and if you just tuned in, you can get some of her stuff from crackerjackeducation.com.au, and you can sign up for $20 a year, and that'll give you access to a whole range of online resources geared towards educating young people on the importance of Aboriginal people throughout Australia. And
it'll be a good opportunity now as well, because I think, you know, with self-imposed isolation, you know, lockdown in certain communities as well, and also, you know, what's being, as we, you know, I think we didn't ask Dr. Brett this morning how far, you know, or how long sort of this pandemic will be hanging around for.
Maybe that's a question for tomorrow.
It's a question for tomorrow. But, you know, with that, you know, with the likelihood of us, you know, being in these sort of restrictions for a couple of months, it'll be a good idea, you know, to get a subscription to Crackerjack Education.
Yeah. But also, you know, talking to mob and talking to elders about their stories and sharing them as well. Jump on our Facebook page, 98.9 FM. And have a yarn with us and send us in some of the stories that you have with your elders. But also on our Facebook page, going to that thing about the coronavirus and Dr. Brett, we are asking the question, what do you want to know about coronavirus? Because we're going to pose these questions to Dr. Brett each day, because our aim essentially is to get as much information out there to you mob, because, you know, as we've seen and we've heard online, the possibility of this actually breaking out in even particularly regional Aboriginal communities could be really dire. So let's keep spreading the important messages out there.
Definitely. Spread the important messages, not the virus.
Yes, 100%.
Definitely.
A bit of a dad joke there, Brett. Mm,
it is, yes, the time of the morning. But, you know, just to recap as well, that our first guest on the program this morning was Dr. Brett Shannon, Chair of the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander Community Health Centre here in southeast Queensland.
And he's also an occupational physician registrar as well. I don't even know what that means, but,
another question for tomorrow.
He's got all the knowledge.
That's it. Yeah, and he gave us you know, we asked him about, you know, should we send our kids to school? And, you know, he gave a good perspective on that, a personal and also a professional one as well.
Yeah. And if you missed out on last night's press conference, there was a lot that the Prime Minister and Chief Medical Officer said in their address to the nation. So some of those things that they said were that they decreased the number of people allowed in social gatherings from 10 to 2. And that is enforceable in most states and territories and carries fines. And states and territories are responsible for enforcing that. They also advise that if you have a chronic illness, if you're over 60, or if you are Indigenous and over 50, that you should stay at home. That's medical advice. Public parks and playgrounds have been closed down, and boot camps have gone from 10 people down to 2. Mm-hmm. Also, funerals, 10 people are still allowed to go to.
In five at weddings.
They've advised that you need to stay at home unless you're going to the shops for medical treatment, for exercise, and for work, necessary work. And you can send your... This week's technically said to be a pupil-free week. So what that basically means is you can send your kids to school if you have to, if you're needed in your workforce. Also download the WhatsApp service at oz.gov.au/WhatsApp or the coronavirus app. Yeah.
And also...
It's a lot of information, Bo.
Definitely. And if you're concerned about... any of the existing health conditions that you do have, don't be afraid to call your local Aboriginal medical service. And also with that, with calling them as well, there's been $1 billion that has been committed to telehealth.
Yes, which is something that if you can't access on that oz.gov.au/WhatsApp, you can call your local Aboriginal medical service and then they can be able to direct you to where you can get help to get on there, or even help you get on there, as Dr. Brett Shannon said from the from this AICS morning. Brisbane. So get on to those services and make sure that you're staying up to date with what's going on around. In order to stay up to date with what's going on around the coronavirus, we're asking Dr. Brett Shannon these questions every day for the first part of our program, and then we're going to go on and have a yarn with someone different throughout the rest of our program.
Definitely.
There's just so much to cover, and there's so much information that needs to be taken in. That's, I guess, what can be a bit worrying sometimes, Bo.
Oh, definitely, sis, you know. And then also it's the added extra pressure of, you know, what's happening, what's going on within our communities as well, you know.
What that pressure is doing to families, you know, whether it's in the space of domestic violence. I know last night that they committed $150 million to support domestic violence. I'm wondering what that looks like.
$70 million to support mental health resources like Headspace and Lifeline.
Yeah.
Which will be needed in the coming months as well.
Yeah. And what I guess I'm hoping, Bo, is that there is an emphasis put on the importance of community controlled services, because what we know from research and what I think that I've seen personally growing up, but also being part of certain health organisations, that our mob making the decisions for our mob is what works the best.
Definitely. And that's always been the case. And we've always done that, you know, pre-colonisation as well. One thing I do want to mention as well, which has got, you know, myself and lots of other Indigenous folks upset as well, is the allowance to let, you know, the mining sector continue as well. And, you know, for some of these mining sectors, some of these mining facilities are near Aboriginal communities.
Yeah. And the fly-in, fly-out stuff, people coming in and out of the community.
They're staying in communities. They're using health services and shopping centres as well, while communities are in lockdown as well.
So what does a lockdown look like, and why is it considered an essential service? Because really, is it? I mean, in a pandemic, I mean, it's a good question to ask, and that's something that we'll explore further in the rest of the week, as well as keeping our focus on education, right?
Definitely, of course.
Education. So stay tuned with us for the rest of the week. I am looking forward to asking Dr. Brett Shannon. As mentioned, jump on our Facebook page. We're going to put a post up where you can ask your coronavirus questions so that we can get that stuff to you every single day with updates overnight around what's sort of happening in the space and what's coming out of Canberra as well from Scott Morrison and the Chief Medical Officer there.
But definitely. So definitely stay tuned to Let's Talk. And if you've enjoyed the program this morning, you can catch the repeat at 7 p.m. tonight, or go to our website, 989fm.com.au, and follow the links because this will be uploaded as a podcast a little bit later on in the day. This is Let's Talk. As always, it's been a pleasure.